are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to the Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told. On today's show, we have Brandon Lirio. Hopefully I got that right, but thanks for coming on.
No problem. You did get it right. Sorry about the background. I'm normally in the office, but I just started grad school today, so I am on a college campus again, and here's to hoping I can finish the master's degree a little bit quicker than the bachelor's.
Yeah, no worry. I see here on your bio that you're a former U.S. Was it Air Force veteran, huh?
Yeah, I did 11 years in the Air Force. I joined probably a year before I graduated high school. Wow. And in August of 2006, I went to basic training, and then I spent time in Mississippi, California, where I met my wife in Illinois, Germany, overseas. So, they say when you're not having fun anymore, it's time to move on. So now I do bodybuilding and coaching full time.
So you, it says here that you got, I just want to for clarification, you got professional qualifications as a bodybuilder. Did you do that through when you were in the Air Force, or what do you exactly mean?
Yeah, I got my professional qualification through the PNBA, the OCB, and I've done shows with the INBF, the NPC. I had registered for the ANBF. And I got my professional qualification in the INBA and PMBA when I was probably a year before I got out of the military, and got my NGA qualification the year after.
So then you're not talking about a certification. You're talking about winning a show that turned you pro.
Correct. But when you talk about, I guess, the bodybuilding certification that you're looking at in the bio is actually through the ISSA now, where they offer a course in bodybuilding. So since I have my master's certification through them, I do hold their bodybuilding certification as well.
Is Tom Platt still a part of that ISSA, ISSA?
You know, I don't necessarily know, especially since a lot of the course material is sort of source written with a group of people. It wasn't really mentioned in the actual course as to whether or not he wrote any of the material. So I doubt it. But I do know that in terms of their expansion into things like powerlifting programs, since I'm right now in the off season, I'm going to try and break the RPS world record at 165. I do know that a lot of the people they've reached out to are still very current in the bodybuilding and powerlifting community. So it's a good chance.
Yeah. Tom and I actually, trained together when I was doing I was at the sort of the regional level, and I was at a point where I needed somebody they had more information than I did. Of course, Tom, if you know anything about Platts, he was, you know, well regarded as a professional bodybuilder back in those days. He was like the second highest money earner, not because he was winning titles, but because of his how effective he was doing seminars. Anyway, he ended up becoming the ISSA, like kind of one of the main guys that was teaching one of their courses or their courses. So I didn't know if he was still, you know, when you were coming through, if they mentioned anything about him.
Yeah, no, they didn't actually. And like I said, I know that especially their new courses are trying to be developed to sort of pull in a wider base of people. So even though bodybuilding is a very niche sport, and that certification would most likely be a very niche certification for most people, it was pretty broad spectrum in terms of mentioning more like the mentality of the division between segments of the body needing to have specific proportionality, and the old, you know, ideals between the 50s and the 70s and then through the Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding in terms of, what you would want for positive genetics in terms of your joint size to segment sizes, things like that, and proportionality percentages. So it's a really good chance. I didn't actually see him listed in the credits or anything like
that. Well, I haven't touched base with him in a few years now, so I didn't know. But when I saw that, you know, that used to be one of the top certification programs that was on the market.
Well, since I have it, I think it's the best one.
Of course, absolutely. I don't think you're biased either, but So the, let me ask you this while we're talking about that certification, and give me an idea. Is it a 2-day? Is it a 3-day? What are the things I had an issue with? And I got certified with, I was certified conditioning, strength and conditioning specialist way back when. And, you know, back then it was like, I studied for a test. It was like, I don't know how many hundred questions there were or whatever, but it was a study for a test. I flew back to St. Louis and I took two parts. There was a application in theory. And, but here's the thing that, you know, I passed it and all that, but it was like, okay, so just because I passed the test, I knew at that point didn't make me really qualified. I mean, it was a good start, but it was far from me being a truly qualified trainer. And I've always had sort of a, you know, I wonder if we can do this better type of, you know, way to do these certification courses. So I didn't know if that is something that has changed, or I'd like to know a little bit about how ISSA does that now.
Yeah. So essentially now it's a self-paced course, but you have 8 to 12 months, depending on if you request an extension or not. But the textbook, it's as far as I know anyway, because I didn't see an actual testing, you know, where you could sit down and test like you would with the NASM, where you have to have a proctored exam. But what I will say, especially when it comes to, let's say, the nutrition side, the personal training side, and then the bodybuilding side, the bodybuilding aspect of it was their case studies at the end that you're required to write were the most extensive that I've had with the ISSA, actually, because it was a brand new course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the way I saw it was I took their earlier courses. It was a little bit easier, but it still could take you, you know, 4 to 6, maybe even 8 hours to finish the exam itself. But again, it's self-paced. But when I did the bodybuilding certification, I mean, it took me a full day and a half to finish the case studies, because you have to take someone through an entire year from off-season to on-season in terms of how you're going to craft their workouts and why, and how you're going to craft their nutrition. So it's much more extensive to that nature, but especially because your, you know, catchphrase for your podcast is definitely where the truth will be heard.
Yeah.
I agree with you in the sense that things need to be done differently in terms of expertise of you know, coaching programs. But I'll be the first to say to most consumers, you know, the onus is kind of on you to decide whether or not that coach knows what they're doing for you. I know plenty of people, especially on my roster, who have bachelor's, master's, and in at least 2 cases, doctorate degrees in the field of kinesiology and exercise physiology, that, you know, I'll explain something to them in terms of a very basic nature of understanding for something that has to do with, you know, their field of study, that it just goes right over their head. So I don't even necessarily think the certification is what matters. You as the consumer should probably be asking a lot more questions as to why something is crafted that way. In terms of your coach explaining something to you in layman's terms should be okay, but if they refuse to explain something to you, or, you know, kind of get a little standoffish that you've asked that question, that's kind of a red flag in and of itself. So I don't necessarily even think it's the certification that's the problem, but people's application of the knowledge and their recall of what they've learned, as opposed to just learning to take a test even in college and getting a degree for it. So
I think that's a really good point. In fact, I have just written something. It's funny that we're talking about this right now. And it's actually, it's like 12 questions as of right now. I may go more than this, but it's a kind of a free report that I'm writing. And it's actually targeting the client and saying, you know, these are the things that you need to ask that the person that you're possibly going to have as your trainer. And if you're getting these kinds of responses, like what you're just saying, you might want to just, that's a flag. So this is, I think you're 100% right. And the mistake that too many people make is that they put their hands in somebody else in blind faith. And I think there's something to be said for that, but you also need to be responsible for your own results. And you need to, even if you don't know what kind of questions to ask, you need to figure that side of it out. So I totally agree with what you're saying. You know, and of course, one of the things that, and the best ways that I've learned, even when having that in that certification that I took, my information has been through firsthand experience. You know, I got into the sport of bodybuilding. I was an athlete, but back in my days, I can't believe that I'm talking this way now, but I'm already almost 65, you know, and in 82 when I started, amazingly, they didn't want certain key position players to lift weights in football. And that was one of those, the specialty position, you know, quarterback. And, you know, back then it was like, get the hell away from the gym, you know, go out here and do something else while the guys are lifting. And because they didn't know. And I guess that's a good thing, because you can screw people up, especially in a sport, if you don't know how to train them sports specifically.
Right.
You know, but it was just looking back now, it's kind of like, you know, it was amazing that we weren't in the gym. And of course, getting into bodybuilding was really my first, because the coaches wouldn't let us in, my first sort of experience with weight training. And of course, back then it was just like, you know, getting into all the magazines and trying to learn it from that way. But it was ultimately like, and we're kind of talking the same way, it was ultimately, you know, getting into the gym yourself and trying things out and seeing what worked for you and what didn't work. Trial and error, you know, repetition is the mother of skill. So I think we're on the same page that way. And I think that's a very smart you know, answer that you gave, because I agree with you on that, you know.
So that's the only kind I have.
Yeah, we'll see. So how did you get into the sport of bodybuilding? I mean, I'm assuming that when you're in the Navy or the Air Force, did you get into it afterwards, or were you starting to train already when you were there?
You know, it's funny too, because I think that the reason why I'm so interested in bodybuilding, and why I say this on every podcast I've ever been on, every article I've ever written, you know, bodybuilding, it for me, I've never loved something so intensely and so unconditionally as bodybuilding, because every single day, you know, that I go in the gym or every training session has never really lost that goosebumps feel to me. And I think it's because I found it organically myself. And I didn't start lifting until I was in the Air Force. And I only did it because while I was throughout high school and, you know, leading into the military, I had a really bad anxiety disorder. And I would just, you know, the first couple months of being on base, I would just kind of sit in my room and I didn't really have anything. And even though I was a social butterfly, so to speak, I really didn't have my thing. Like, I didn't want to be one of those guys that, whether or not I did 20 years in the military, I didn't want to be one of those guys where that was my only identity. And this is kind of what I tell a lot of my clients who are in the military now, is that the military is not your identity. It should be your occupation. And if you think it's your identity, these are the guys who get out of the military and they either wind up going right back in, or they fall into this really deep depression, is because once they take that uniform off, that was their only identity. You know, they were a soldier, they were an airman, they were a sailor. And then they take the uniform off and they don't have anything else. Well, I was in the Air Force, but I am a bodybuilder. That's sort of my personality type now. So I got into it just as a you know, a slight hobby. Shout out to my first ever training partner, Dominic Brisbane, way back in 2007, who kind of showed me the ropes in the gym. And then I really got into bodybuilding as a sport when I moved to, obviously, the Mecca being California. It was sort of a dare by a buddy of mine named Sam Soto when we were at Vandenberg Air Force Base, California, where I said I always was interested in the sport and I wanted to do a show. And I would kind of, you know, fluff my feathers back and forth of, I was going to do one, I may do one. And on shift, he was one day just saying, well, then sign up for one. And I was like, all right, I will then. He was like, good, do it. Yeah. But he pulled up the website for an NPC show, and I signed up and I did it. That was sort of my introduction into the understanding between differences between tested bodybuilding and untested bodybuilding. And that's really when I started. Even when I was on stage at that point, you know, my posing was off. I had a friend of mine, you know, write a diet plan for me that was unpaid for. I solicited basically as a favor. And I also love these guys who all want to go pro their first show. You can go back on my Facebook, whether it be my public or my private account, and take a look at my first photos from my first show. I wasn't ready, right? No. But my first show was really my introduction to understanding if I even wanted to train for the next 2 to 3 years to become competitive and successful. And I think not enough people also dig, you know, deep into that and say, look, this is my first time on stage. My ultimate result should be, do I even like this? Do I understand what the judges are looking for? And now do I understand what they've told me are my weak points that I can change, so that over the next couple of years I can become a world champion, not hey, am I now the best my first time out? If not, then the sport just isn't for me. Yeah. Or vice versa, I won my first show, so now I should be world champion. And if I'm not, then the judges don't know what they're looking at. Both of those are just so wrong. And so, you know, if I could give some advice to anyone who was in my position back in, you know, 2012 was my first show. You're not really supposed to be the world champion your first show. There's a reason Ronnie Coleman, you know, went from dead last in his first Olympia to surprise win against Flex Wheeler on his first Olympia appearance, or, you know, vice versa with Philip Ricardo and Kiyoshi Moody and, you know, all these other guys who started in the natural divisions. We didn't just win the Olympia as our first show. You really got to learn how to be a lasting pro and make it work for you in terms of a lasting career.
Yeah, that's a good point. Going back to, you're talking about how people in the military, it becomes an identity instead of their occupation. The same thing happens with athletes I've seen over the years. I've worked with lots of athletes and trained them. You know, once they get out of the sport, it's like they're lost and they really don't know what to do. And they crash and burn because of that. So, you know, it's scary, actually. It's sad to see some of that happen, at least from the athletes, some of the athletes I've seen over the years. And it's because of what you're talking about.
Yeah, especially what kind of irks me nowadays, too, is, you know, with the introduction of social media, my least favorite thing, and I'll be the first to say bad coaching has ruined plenty of a metabolism. You know, bad lifting mentalities have destroyed plenty of backs and knees and hips and all this other stuff. But what really bothers me is that someone who will, you know, talk a big game in their first year about how successful bodybuilding has made them, you know, in terms of the health industry and how focused it has made them, and, you know, how much it alters their dopamine and their serotonin to make them feel good and took their anxiety away. Then they'll have a couple of off weeks and like you're talking about, in some cases, an off year, and they'll be the first to come out and say how bodybuilding ruined their metabolism. Yeah. And, you know, how bodybuilding ruined their self-image. And it's like, look, bodybuilding is an outlet. If you've ruined these things, it's because you incorrectly use the tools. And, you know, you need to kind of double back and take a look at what's going on. What I tell my clients is zoom out and take a look at all of the factors and aspects of things that maybe have changed your perspective on how you're viewing these things that are really ultimately catalysts for changes in your life, not necessarily something that was a decision that made a direct result that affected you negatively. Like I said, I've seen a lot of these people who, like you said, for a year or two are just all in, then they'll have a bad season, and then all of a sudden they're all out. And I think that a lot of that, like you said, has to do with people's inability to be able to focus on growth in terms of, you know, look, sometimes you make a wrong decision for the stage and it doesn't work out. Doesn't necessarily mean you're not cut out for this sport or that your identity was incorrect and now you need to find something else. It really should be a pivot point into understanding what is going to work for you and how to alter maybe what you just did to just make it a little bit better for what the overall goal is. And so, again, if anyone's listening to this looking for that type of advice, I would say, you know, don't put too much stock into the people who are either, you know, so much in on social media that they never have a bad day. But also on the other end, you know, if they're constantly complaining about everything and then all of a sudden they talk about bad coaching and bad judging and how bodybuilding ruined, maybe that's just their non-rose-colored glasses that they've put on and now they're looking for something else to hate. And unfortunately, you know, their fitness career was the next thing on the list.
Yeah, and you're right about that. And the other thing about the sport is, as you know, and what I ran across when I was competing, is that too many people – they don't really understand how subjective that sport is and the process of that. You got to learn how to play the game. No matter which game you're in, there's a certain way that you need to play that game. And if you're all wrapped up in just wins and losses, then you're going to be really disappointed in the sport, from my perspective, because there is a learning process. And as you know, in this sport, your body can be in peak shape all the way to the last week and you can ruin it by doing something incorrectly with water or salt or whatever, you know? And then on top of that, you're talking about a group of judges and it's not a black and white sport. And I always, with my people, I try to let them know as a trainer, is I try to put it into a perspective that they can possibly understand, because you really don't understand until you go through that. But it's like, look, you know, do it for the reasons of improving yourself each and every time that you step on stage, and realize that it's not going to be just a straight climb to the top. It's going to be ruffled with a lot of, you know, ups and downs. And there may be times when you're the better athlete, but sometimes the way this works is that you have to be seen a lot of times on the circuit. And if you're just new coming on, even if you're slightly better than the pro there, or the person that's come back two or three times, you may not get that nod, you know, because I just really didn't like the idea when these athletes would come back to the back and throwing their trophies and throwing a fit, man. And it's like, yeah, I think you're doing this for the wrong reason at that point.
Yeah. So, and here's the, especially when it comes to, because I'm a certified head judge, a promoter, and, you know, having won, you know, two universe titles, a world title, two Olympia titles at this point, I laugh at a lot of these guys, you know, who take two ends of the spectrum. And the first end of the spectrum is they compete twice a month, every month for 10 years. They bring exactly the same package. Their, you know, their first package was okay, and it just gets progressively worse because their body never gets a chance to rest. But the other thing is this new trend, which, don't get me wrong, I understand if you, you know, go to compete and you get middle of the pack for two shows, then basically the judges are telling you you've either chose the wrong division or you're not ready for that level of contest. But the other side of that is, look, if you won your division in your show, go to a pro show, you know, world championships, nationals, the universe, the Olympia, and you win your division, you don't need a two-year break. So these people who win a major world title and then take a two-year break for growth, they come back 2 years later and wonder why none of the judges, because the judging panel has changed, don't right. remember them. They're almost offended. Look, you just won. The judges have told you your package is what we're looking for. Your relevancy in the sport is the only thing that's going to keep them from remembering why they said you yeah. were the world champion. So if you're losing, you need a long offseason, because scientifically you can't grow muscle in a deficit. But outside of that, if you're already winning, and let's say, you know, it's you and one other guy every year and you've bested him twice, don't take your 2 year offseason. The only thing you're asking for is the judges panel to forget who you are. I've said this on multiple occasions that you can capitalize on human error in this sport. And by human error, I don't even necessarily mean that it's an error, but rather the human nature of this sport is, if I just competed at the universe 3 months ago and then I come to the Olympia, the judges are immediately going to say, let's see how Brandon's package has changed since X. If you won the universe 2 years ago and this is your first show back, they're going to say, oh, that was the guy who won a couple years ago.
Yeah.
How does he compare to Brandon? That's what they're going to say. Even if you're the better athlete, they said my name twice. And the margin of error in terms of human interaction is that means I'm in their mouth and in their mind a lot more than you are. Not necessarily saying that that's going to win me championships or that, you know, that's me trying to game the system. But there is a human element that if it gives you a 2% margin of error to swing in a positive direction, why wouldn't you take advantage of that when the judges haven't told you, dude, take 2 years and grow because you're 5 pounds too light? If you're winning, continue to win. There's no need to take a 2 to 3 year off season and have them forget about you. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, and you're kind of making my point that that's part of learning how to play the game, you know, and that's exactly yeah, right what I mean, you know. So when did you start your first show? How old were you?
Let's see. That was 2012, was the Orange County Muscle Classic in Culver City, California. So,
oh, you're not that old, for goodness sake.
What, 24? I think I was 24 at the time, 24, 25.
Yeah. Who was the promoter? Do you remember? I competed at Culver
City. Oh, man, I don't. It's been, and that was the thing. See, like you said, who's the promoter? I know after that show who was the promoter of every show yeah. after that. I didn't even know that was a thing when I started. I was yeah. like, I guess these shows, you know, somebody rents a theater and then
yeah.
the judges. And then I didn't understand even how the, you know, the sanctioning of judges worked back then. So I swear I couldn't tell you if my life depended on it, who actually promoted
and,
that show.
And I competed in those shows because of the promoter. I liked the way they ran the shows, and, you know, it was a first-rate operation. And I can't think of his damn name now because I've been out of it for too long. But you know, I competed in Culver City as well as San Diego, same promoter, and he put on some really good shows. So you started at 24. Now, were you competing in these different categories now? Classic, is that with the board shorts on, classic, or is that bodybuilding?
Nope. So classic physique is essentially bodybuilding with a little bit longer trunks in terms of the 80s and 70s style bodybuilding poses and routines. So everything that has to do with the old proportions that were outlined, you know, in the Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, from, you know, ankle size to calves to forearms from the wrist, bicep size, chest size, V-taper, and all of the poses are supposed to mirror the actual presentation of, you know, the 70s and 80s style bodybuilders like Frank Zane and Samir and, you know, Flex Wheeler, all the older guys who really paved the way for modern bodybuilding, which kind of changed between 88 and 94 with, you know, the Ronnie Coleman and Dorian Yates and, you know, Jay Cutler's. So, what you're talking about is basically the difference between men's physique, which is the board shorts, classic physique, which is the smaller 70s style bodybuilding trunks, and then professional bodybuilding, which is the new style trunks.
Got it. Now, for the guys that are in the bodybuilding division, then you're giving me some really specific, you know, for your particular category. But what about the guys that are competing in the regular bodybuilding? What kind of specifications are they? You know, I don't really know what the difference is for those guys, Dan.
Sure. So this is my, normally when I have new clients that are trying to compete, this is sort of a Skype call that I have with them, whether or not they're females or males, is kind of explaining the differences between the divisions. Now, obviously my broad overarching sport-specific explanations of the divisions is there, but in terms of things like conditioning, dryness, what we consider in terms of the individual separations between muscle fibers and looking at the condition of the body is going to change between federations, but the difference between, I'm going to stick specifically to the male divisions here, would be the difference between basically your top five divisions, which would be sport model, men's physique, men's classic physique, men's bodybuilding, and then, you know, the men's fitness, which includes the actual routines. So men's physique is going to be the board shorts. And what it really started out as was, this was supposed to be a division of people who at any given day would be that person you would see on the beach or in the gym that would have an attainable physique that was, you know, somebody's overall goal in terms of, hey, I recognize this person as a fitness professional just because of how they look, but it's not too big, not too dry, not too grainy or striated, and not too much vascularity. Then you take a step into the classic physique division, which unfortunately, as of late, people try to either stick to two divisions where they'll do men's physique and classic physique, or classic physique and open bodybuilding. And what I try to tell people is that that's not really a good goal, because you should be sticking to the judges' criteria. And the judges' criteria for men's classic physique is much bigger, much more dry look than men's physique in terms of the detail. You do have to have a lot more leg development, and then the poses themselves, especially because in the classic physique division, our posing routines are the only posing routines that are judged other than just an overall stage presentation. So a 60 to 90 second actual stage presentation in terms of the actual choreography to music is judged in the classic physique division. And the proportionality of the V taper to the legs has to be very specific, in the sense that if your quads are as big as your V taper, you're probably more geared toward open bodybuilding. And perhaps the reason you may or may not be placing has more to do with your condition, or what I like to call the detail in your poses, which is basically that individualized muscle separation, may be the reason you're not winning as much as you would like to. And then, like I said, the open men's bodybuilding is the modern version of bodybuilding, which is accentuation on getting as big as possible while staying as conditioned as possible. This division includes the most dry look, the most striated look. You're looking for the nice wide shoulders that basically should mirror the width, or at least a close stance of the width to the quads and the leg development. And then in the rear pose, having a really imposing V taper that mirrors the condition and the striation in the upper and lower quadrants of the body. So you'll notice that the difference between, let's say, men's physique, men's classic physique, and men's bodybuilding has a lot to do with proportionality differences, condition differences, and posing differences.
That's interesting. I mean, I like that the fact that there's so much distinction there, because I didn't really know that. I mean, I come from a time where it was just bodybuilding. You know, when I came back after a 13-year layoff, I was in shock because I was bored. There was, you know, there weren't as many categories as you're talking about, but just having the guys that were bored in the board competition, I was like, what the hell is this? I mean, and I understood why they did that, but one thing that sticks out from what you said, are you telling me that the guys that are in the open bodybuilding do not have to choreograph a routine?
Okay, so it's not necessarily that they don't, because in the judges' criteria, it basically says that you're required to have an individual posing routine. But there are only a few shows and even fewer divisions in terms of, or rather federations, that actually use it to judge. In men's open bodybuilding, you are required to have a 60 to 90 second routine, but it's not judged as part of your score unless it's so close, excuse me, between the top couple guys that they're using it as a deciding factor of stage presence.
Right.
In men's classic physique, it's listed, at least in our federation, as a very major part of the overall score for the athletes. In the men's physique division, they do have what's called a T-walk presentation, which is an individualized routine in a T fashion on the actual stage. That is factored into their stage presentation and their posing, which is part of the judging criteria, but the choreography of it is not a requirement. So yes, it is true that the men's bodybuilders don't have a graded choreography routine in terms of their individual routine, but they are required to have some level of individualized 60 to 90 second routine. It's just not included in their score.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I noticed right away, because when I was competing, we had to have a choreographed routine. At first it was 90 seconds, and then it got down, when I came back 13 or 14 years later, then it was like 60 seconds. But we got judged on that, and it became part of, it was like so much percentage of the overall score. So I was really taken back and almost disappointed when I just saw these guys just moving around willy-nilly just to some random music. It just didn't feel right to me, you know. But what you're saying in that category, it's more like when I was competing. It sounds very much like that. The only thing that I want to ask you is that it sounds to me, because of how you explain how that category should look pretty much, I don't think you're going to have somebody that looks like, for example, the difference between a Frank Zane, Arnold, that's a classic physique, compared to like a Dorian Yates. It doesn't seem like you're going to see many Dorian Yates type of body types or styles in your particular category. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're right. And at least that's the way that it should work. And so this is a lot of times what I tell athletes is, look, if your federation is telling you this is what you should look like, and that this is what the judges are supposed to be looking for, and then you go there and the Dorian Yates type guy wins, even though you had a better routine and better proportions and, you know, better conditioning, that's when you say, hey, I don't necessarily know if this federation is for me, because they told me not to look like that, and I didn't, and I lost.
Yeah.
So yes, that is true. The reason why I would say that, though, and what I would caution people on is to focus more on, proportionality of upper and lower body and segmental lean analysis more than I would, hey, that guy's bigger than me, he's going to win, or hey, that guy's too big for the division, he's going to lose.
Yeah.
It should more be on your physique. You know, how closely am I mirroring my V taper to my quad width? You know, how overpowering are my legs when compared to the division of my upper body? How detailed is the individual sections on my back or my legs? That stuff matters way more to judges than, at least it should, than who's the biggest guy on stage, or, you know, how conditioned can I get, which is another thing I've been telling a lot of people lately. Look, bodybuilding is not a conditioned contest. If it was, everybody would just run and run and run until you could see every separation in their muscles.
Right.
They would get on stage and the leanest guy would win. It's not supposed to be that. It's called bodybuilding for a reason. And a lot of those other divisional requirements, like fullness and size and condition and posing and stage presentation, all of that stuff matters. So try to pay more attention to getting your proportions right, getting your details right, making sure that left to right matches and top to bottom matches, and that my posing matches the division. That's going to be way more important than just how big can I possibly get.
Exactly. Well, you know, even like when we were competing, they always told us, like, the biggest guy is not necessarily going to win. In fact, it's usually right. the guy that comes in, you know, who's sacrificed a little lean weight, a little bit, you know, and they're leaner and more ripped. You're going to look more, not only more defined, but you're going to pop on stage. And you really didn't right. notice that until you got on stage and you were next to that guy who was smaller than you, but who was ripped to shreds, you know, even though you were much yeah. bigger. You know, you learn that kind of stuff. It's interesting. So when you first started your, when you came in to your first show, what was your body weight?
Oh, man, I would be surprised if it was anything more than 130, 135, if I was lucky.
Okay, and then what's your body weight now when you compete?
In the off season nowadays, I probably hit just over 180, and on stage after the carb up, probably 152, 155.
Yeah, so you're dropping about 30 pounds for the event.
Yeah, and I'm a really short guy, by the way, so, you know, the difference between 132, 135 back then and 155 now over the course of 10 years, I'm only 5'5". That really made a difference. That's why I will say, in terms of genetics, I'm a little bit blessed in terms of, you know, my bone density and my bone width, where I hold my body fat tends to be pretty favorable. And then because I have a short frame, you know, when I was growing up in middle school and high school, I hated it. But now that I'm a bodybuilder, it actually is really helpful, because putting on 10 pounds of muscle on 5'5 looks like a lot more than it would if I was, you know, 6'5.
Very true. Guys like Lou Ferrigno, you know, and even Arnold, those tall guys, it was when they finally filled in, they were, you know, impressive. But to get to that point, man, I mean, obviously you have, you know, that makes a difference. With your training, I always like to, there's so many ways that people train and eat. It's just amazing to me. You know, we talk about the physiology. We're all, you know, have a physiology. We're all humans, but we all, you know, it certainly is not one routine or one diet fits all, by no means. With that being said, what was your, when you trained, you trained body parts twice a week, once a week, there's a lot of variations there. What was your strategy?
So, and I still follow this strategy to this day. If you're doing anything for more than, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks at a time, in terms of, you know, the mentality of your lifts, you're doing yourself a disservice. So right now, I'm in a powerlifting block, where I'm doing, measuring my strength curve, doing limit strength training and RPE style training. You know, in a couple months after April, when I'm done at the RPS meet, you know, I'll probably go back into some different hypertrophy blocks in terms of German volume training, or, you know, Y3T, or even, you know, something by a good friend of mine, John Meadows, like Creeping Death or something, pulse volume. You know, I truly enjoy the idea that bodybuilding, in a sense, is the idea of tricking your body so often that it has to continuously adapt like a well-oiled machine to meet the new demands that you're putting on it. But the key word there is new demands, right? If I continue to lift the same amount of weight in the same amount of reps, I'm not bodybuilding. I'm eventually going to adapt and eventually just start to get worse, actually. So the ideology is, if I have to put, new stressors on the body so that I can, you know, maintain new levels of growth every year, what it really comes down to is then you have to continuously give your body new levels to break through those plateaus. So in terms of my mentality to get there, I really change up my lifts in terms of the complete mentality of reps used, weight percentages used, whether I'm going for high reps or low reps, about every 3 to 4 weeks, I would say.
Yeah. And this is kind of where, this, again, you're making my point, because like for me, for example, because one thing that is obvious talking to you is that you're a student of the game. And I like that. You know, I call it, I'm doing these podcasts now and these posts. And I have, we wrote books called Serious Growth. I don't know if you know that, or but back in the 80s. Okay. And I call it the Serious Growth Creed. And it's built on 6 principles. And, you know, one of the principles is knowing, being a student of the game and knowing things to the nth degree. And I can tell by talking to you that you're that person. But let me give you my take on this with the way I train. And this is based on my studying the physiology. I tell people that the what happens in bodybuilding is people switch their programs too often. And I'm not saying that, I'm not saying that you changing it every 3 or 4 weeks is too often. I'm just saying like the CrossFitters of the world, for example, I think they're, you know, they are, I mean, listen, they're in great condition, but in terms of bodybuilding, being specific to muscle growth and bodybuilding, all that, the fact that they're changing so often is actually inefficient, because the physiology needs repetition in order to adapt to that stimulus. And you're, if you've been around long enough, which you have, and I have too, you know that you actually need to enter into a plateau, because that's where all the results really happen, is inside that plateau. The key is not staying there for too long and adding what you said, bringing new stuff, something new for your body to adapt. But if you are constantly changing the routine too often, your body will adapt, because that's its human nature. It's part of your fight or flight nervous system. So it's going to do that. The question is it the most efficient way? And I would, you know, not argue, but I would take the position that I think you're going to make more, not be afraid to go into a plateau. Just don't live there, because if you stay there too long, then you're dead in the water. I think we're kind of talking about the same thing in a way, but my point is, you know, there's just different ways to go about getting a result, because you look great. I mean, your body's, you know, it looks great, and it's hard to argue your results, you know? And I just think, go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting too, when you talk about, like you just said, where it comes down to, you know, there is a specific look in terms of this sport being so incredibly derived and driven by the idea that, look, it is a stage show. So my favorite thing is when I have competitors that'll go, hey, you know, I know the show's coming up in a couple months, but, you know, we cut my calories and my bench went down 15%. Right. That's because no judge is going to ask you on stage what your bench press is.
Exactly.
Maybe double back and focus on the goal. And the goal here is, what does my physique look like? And so a lot of times I think what's difficult for people is getting out of their own head in the idea that, you know, I'm getting less able in this specific area. Doesn't that mean I'm doing something wrong? No, not necessarily. Ask yourself what the end result is and whether or not this is one of the ways that you can get there. And I think if more people, you know, approach things in that sense, it would be a lot easier for them to kind of suspend disbelief of a drop in functionality as they're leading into the shows.
But that's the reason why these people at that stage of the game need guys like you and me, because it's like kind of like when I was, you know, I went off, and after I got out of the sport of bodybuilding, I decided that I wanted to do road biking, you know, these long distance. Right. Me on a road bike, Brandon, is like a bumblebee trying to fly. It's not supposed to happen, and yet somehow it does. Because I have the wrong body type for, you know, I'm not that guy that's 160 pounds, never will be. You know, it's been a while since I've been a sophomore in high school. But it just interested me, just kind of like the sport of bodybuilding, because it was hard. It looked hard to do, and it was. Then that was part of the attraction. I wanted to see if I could actually do that. And, of course, being a, you know, I did it. I used to ride 200-mile events, 300-mile events. And it was just more for, I wanted to see if I could conquer that. But a guy at the bike shop told me one thing that you're saying right now. I went in after about 2 or 3 years of bike riding, because when I came back from Amsterdam, my wife is from Holland. I met her at a show. Never mind. It doesn't matter. But anyway, the point is, over there, they ride bikes. There are more bikes over there than cars. And I just got the wild hair to do this. But anyway, the next thing you know, I'm at a bike shop. And I'm telling the guy, I want this bike over here, this badass bike, $1,000 bike. And he said, you know what? This was him being a personal trainer in his industry. He says, what you want and what you need are two different things. And,
true.
You know, so this is where that person that's just starting out, and you make such a good point. And when they say, well, you know, about this heavy lifting and, you know, it's not specific to the sport as much as volume conditioning is. This is where they really need a guy like you, you know, to shorten that learning curve. But boy, I'll tell you what, when you get something in somebody's, when you got something in your head like this, it's hard to turn people around, you know, for a while, because they're really stubborn about that. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but you know, sometimes it's one of those things that really holds you back. Cause like you said, you got to get out of your own way many times.
Yeah. And I'll really press that idea when it comes to the diet piece, because, and I'll be the first to say that, you know, in my off seasons, I'm a little bit bigger of a fan of things like intuitive eating and if it fits your macros. But this whole, you know, if it fits your macros culture where you can hop on Instagram and watch some guy every day try to fit Pop-Tarts and donuts and burgers and, you know, fast food into their diet. Because, like I said, I will concede to the idea that calorie balance is the most important thing in fitness and even in general health. But when it comes to this, you know, new culture of if it fits your macros, it's, you know, if your coach isn't allowing you to have Pop-Tarts or isn't allowing you to have cereal, you know, it's because they're stuck in their bodybuilding ways. And, you know, that's not the best way to do it. And, you know, hyper restriction is just a form of a dietary disorder. And it comes down to, just like you said, look, sometimes you got to get out of your own way. And if you're 40, 50, 80, 100 pounds overweight, the reason if it fits your macros or intuitive eating is not for you is because intuitively you've taught yourself to overeat.
Yeah.
Or intuitively, you've always tried to fit garbage into your macros. So maybe your coach is taking a specific manner or mode of getting you fit so that you can get to an end result and a goal that's a little bit more understandable, and then kind of move into the intuitive side of, well, I'm really not supposed to have Pop-Tarts every day, so I'll have something else. Or, you know, my body is a bit more fat sensitive, so maybe half a jar of peanut butter every morning is not the best option, right?
Yeah.
So it really also does come down to, like you said, when you need to get out of your own way, that doesn't necessarily just mean in terms of training mentality. It's really the mentality of you thinking you always know what's best when someone is kind of pointing a mirror at you and going, dude, this is what got you here. Maybe if you just suspend your disbelief for a minute and try something else, you'll see that it's more effective. I wish more people nowadays would do that.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. You know, I've been doing this for 38 years, and it's amazing how many things I've seen over the years. And, you know, it cracks me up as well. So you're this personal training, are you doing, and it sounds like you're doing some of this stuff on over the online as a trainer, or do you actually have a clientele that you train somewhere?
Well, both. The entire bottom portion of my house is actually outfitted as a private personal training center. So I do have in-person clients here in the state of Connecticut. You know, Battleground Fitness is my company that runs online. Currently, we're in 14 different countries with, since the company opened, you know, over 750 athletes, to include world champions, triathletes, professional power lifters, IFBB pros, INBA, PNBA pros, OCB pros, WMBF pros, general fitness clients. And so, you know, most of the stuff is done online, in the sense that I think nowadays the personal training culture of someone kind of standing over you and counting your reps and, you know, telling you what to do, it's not for everybody. And I think that the new online coaching, while it can be a little bit destructive in the sense that everybody can consider themselves an online coach, can also be incredibly helpful in the sense that if you're not the type of person who likes the accountability every second of every workout where you feel like you're being babied, you can still get an insane level of professional level coaching. And for me, I actually require daily form check videos in the gym where, you know, 2 to 4 exercises every day. People have to send me their videos so I can monitor their progress in terms of weight progression, depth in the actual exercise itself. So, you know, I'm not, just to use myself as an example, you know, you could be a general fitness client in the state of Nebraska and use the current, you know, Mr. Natural Olympia, Mr. Universe champion to help you increase your squat depth and your squat weight, you know, 15% over a couple weeks. That was not able to be done years ago. Just like you just said, you know, it's really interesting the idea that back during the day, if you wanted to train with Charles Glass, you know, you had to go to Mecca in California and train with him. Or, you know, if I wanted to train with John Meadows, I would have to go to his house in Massachusetts and do that. Nowadays, you don't have to do that. And I think that that's where I wish more people would kind of reevaluate the value of online coaching, because it can be incredibly valuable for people who don't like the standardized method of personal training.
So let me ask you this. If I understand you right, you got 700 athletes. Is that right? Across the country?
Over the course of the entire company, we had at any given time, I have anywhere from 65 to 100. Right now, we have I myself as a coach have 70.
Okay, so how do you stay engaged with all these people, even online? Because, you know, one of the things, I still have one training studio. And of course, you know, it's about accountability. And yet, I understand what you're saying, that, you know, some people don't need or don't want that helicopter trainer. But at the same time, how do you, with 70 people, how are you able to, especially when people are sending you these videos, and I think that's a great idea, by the way, but how can you possibly manage 70 clients like that and keep them all on a path for a good result?
Well, so here's the value in kind of the 21st century ability of technology, is that if I had to get on a phone call like this in a long form discussion, you know, with every single one of my clients, I wouldn't be able to do it, right? But if you're taking a form check video of your squats at 8 reps, it's about 37 seconds long. So, you know, sending me a 37 second long clip and then me either recording a voice or video or even just texting you a paragraph worth of information, you know, 70 clients a day, even if you're, you know, with them 2 to 5 minutes at a time for each one of those videos, is only a couple hours.
Yeah.
What I will caution, especially for people who are using online coaches, if they're only talking to you once a week, and I've actually had clients switch over to Battleground that, you know, have had people basically tell them, look, if you aren't on this specific day, every 2 weeks, I'm not going to talk to you. I won't check your emails. I won't answer you back. That's a disservice to you. You're paying for a service. And it took me a very long time to be able to handle that many people. And it also took me a very long time to be able to understand that I myself as a person, you know, you can't have your phone in your face 24 hours a day. And so my clients know that my average response time for form check videos and stuff is probably about an hour. I very, very rarely, unless I'm incredibly ill or out of the country, will it take me more than 24 hours to answer an email or a Facebook message, which is, I think, kind of one of the reasons why we have such a high recidivism rate for our memberships, is that as a coach, you should be hearing from me once a day as long as you want to. But the other side of that is some people, and this was me when I had a coach back when I started, I don't really like you said, the helicopter style of coaching. So I send all my stuff once a week, and, you know, that person will write me back a very lengthy response, and that will be the end of it until I talk to them next. So it depends on the person. It depends on what they like. It depends on how I reach them. Some clients I talk to every few hours every single day, and some clients only want to reach me once every 5 to 7 days and send all their information at once. Neither of which is, you know, better or worse than the other. It really depends on the person. And I think that it took me years of conditioning into understanding what my threshold was for too much or too little at any given time. And I have turned clients away when I've said, look, I'm a little too busy right now. I don't have any open coaching spots, but I'll put you on the waiting list. I've had a waiting list as deep as 10 or 12 clients at a time. So I think that if you're looking into starting this coaching ability, you also have to understand that it's not your level of communication that matters, right? It's the delivery method of what the client can accept. So if somebody needs that style of constant progression of making sure that, you know, they have this really steady accountability, that's great. But sometimes that's going to actually turn a lot of people away.
Yeah.
So I would advise clients and coaches alike, find out not just what motivates you, but find out how to reach out when you're not motivated. And as a coach, find out what triggers you can read from people and how they type and how their videos look or how their face looks in their progress photos that will kind of trigger to you that they're not where they should be mentally. And that should trigger you to more, you know, reach out to them in terms of like, hey, fitness aside, man, are you okay? Like, do you want to talk?
Yeah.
And I think that that's a valuable piece that a lot of coaches don't utilize nowadays.
You're right about that, because I tell the trainers, I said, you know, one of the things that bothered me as I was coming through the sport was these trainers that were walking around the gym training their clients with clipboards. And I told my trainer, said, no clipboards in the gym. I do not want a clipboard, because I want you engaging with that person. And just what you're talking about, they're going to be having a bad day. And you have to understand when that's happening right off the bat, because you may have to switch your approach to make them productive that day, you know. And that's exactly what you're saying, man. You're spot on. So let me ask you this, for the people that are watching this or listening to this, what would something like this cost them if they came to you for online training like this? What does something like that run? Because I'm not necessarily in that side of the business, you know, it's fairly new to me, even though I,
I think that the greatest portion of my career, I really took into account the military pay scale, because it's an extended period in terms of payment where, you know, these guys and gals in the armed services, I don't know how many people actually know this, but they only get paid once every 2 weeks. And, you know, the lower echelons of the enlisted guys, especially when they live in dorms, is not that much, right? And so you take a look at some of these online coaching programs that want 6 months up front, which is, you know, thousands of dollars, is kind of the reason why people feel stuck. And, you know, with my company, I was like, look, it really shouldn't be that way, right? Because you can always kind of, you know, suspend service if somebody's trying to, you know, hamstring you in terms of payment. But the important piece should be, you know, somebody being able to afford the reach that they have for this fitness dream of theirs. So for me, I listed my services kind of grading a pay scale after the military enlisted pay structure. So, you know, a 12-week program to include workouts, diet, and supplement advisements that changes every 3 to 4 weeks would only cost somebody $145 to $155, depending on if they were a general fitness client versus an actual sports-specific client. Yeah. And it should only, and this is the way I do it, it only comes out once every 4 weeks. You don't pay up front. And after it runs for 12 weeks successively, it moves month to month. So essentially, it costs you the same as a startup fee as it does every month thereafter, and it can run indefinitely. So I've had some people that have been with me since the day the company opened in 2016. And I've had, you know, some people come back where they'll do 12 to 15 week preps. They'll go on their own and come back the next year.
Yeah.
So really anywhere from 145 to 155, and everything changes every 3 to 4 weeks.
I assume that you're doing this full time.
Yeah, it's my full time job. I also own a supplement store called Battleground Nutrition in Avon, Connecticut. And we're looking at opening our first public gym location here in the next couple of years. And other than that, I obviously also compete full time around the world. And I'm in grad school for exercise science with a concentration in human performance.
Beautiful. Hey, listen, I want to go ahead and wrap this up. You're, you know, one of the things that brought me back out again after this big layoff was actually I started reading Google News, and, you know, some of these trainers that I was seeing on social media, it was starting to drive me crazy a little bit. And I just want to, you know, my way of staying relative now, Brendan, as far as I'm concerned, is through all the information and knowledge that I have over the years. I can pass that forward. And I'm also, when I'm doing these podcasts, because most of the people that, especially the ones that have competed, they're all doing personal training on some level. Most of them are part-time. Not too many are doing full-time. And there's a reason for that, I believe. And there's a reason that 95% of the people that get into this business fail. We're not going to go into that. You're not one of those guys. You're the real deal that's out there. And, you know, if people don't know that, I would like to tell them on my podcast, because I can size you up in about 3 minutes, just because I've been around long enough and around enough personal trainers, and you're legit. You're the real deal. If somebody needed to get some serious, to the nth degree training from a student of the game, you're definitely the guy. And so I want to, you know, thank you for coming on. Would you like to promote your product or, you know, for the people that are out there, would you like to tell them where to find you if you want to?
Sure. I super appreciate that. So you can find me on Instagram at @BGF_, my last name Lirio. So at @BGF_Lirio. You can reach me for coaching services at bgfitonline.com or via email, which is bgfitnessonline@gmail.com. And then you can get the Battleground Nutrition Supplements. There'll be a link on, we're currently redoing the website where it'll be BG Nutrition. That'll be a link on bgfitonline.com. And like I said, I mean, at any point in time, I super appreciate the shout out, by the way, in terms of, you know, calling me the real deal, because imposter syndrome is a very real thing. And I would suggest to anybody who thinks that, you know, hey, I'm never going to be in that realm, or, you know, I'm never going to be that guy that's the go-to guy. If you knew how many guys are backstage at world championships thinking they still look 135 pounds or that, you know, they should have done 12 more weeks of prep, or even myself in terms of, you know, every night I go to sleep going, you know, do I really know as much as I think I know about the fitness industry, or do I really understand how this supplement works? That's a very real thing. And it's okay to admit you're wrong. It's okay to understand that you can learn something from other people, but it's also okay to understand that you do know what you're talking about and reach for it. So whether you want to talk to me about becoming a coach in your own sense of running your own business, or you're looking to really take your fitness to the next level, anybody that listens to this or reaches out to me, for whatever reason you want to talk, I'm always here.
I like it. And I really like your energy and your mindset and your strategy, man. I think you're on a great path. So I really enjoyed talking to you. I learned stuff every time I come on, and I learned things from you today, Brandon. So I wish you well, and maybe one of these days our paths will cross. You know, one of the things I'm starting to do now, after this is like my 35th or 40th podcast, and we're just building this as we go, but I would like to, at some point, if you have somebody else that you'd like to bring on, and we can do like a, you know, three-way or threesome, that would be great, because the more that, as far as I'm concerned, the more people that we can get talking the same way, as in terms of, you know, the real information that's out there. And the way that you explain it is very smart. You're not this guy who is even though you know a lot of shit, and I can tell, you don't think it's just all about what you know. And what I like about our discussion is that, in a way, early on, I respectively disagreed with you a little bit. And I did that for a reason, because I wanted to see how you were going to respond to me. And you were just, you're right on the money, man. And I think the more people that we can bring on and, you know, and say it the way it's supposed to be said and let the truth be told, I think it just makes us all better. Anyway.
Well, I appreciate that. And for anybody looking in the immediate vicinity, on, I believe it's April 4th, shout out to my training partner, Brian Peterson. Both he and I and a couple of our clients from Battleground will be at the RPS Revolution meet here in New England, in the state of Connecticut. So if anybody's looking to come say hi or check out the other side of bodybuilding in terms of functionality, come check out me and Brian and all the Battleground clients at the RPS Revolution meet here in Connecticut.
Beautiful, man. Well, I'll let you go. You got some of that airplane dust off you, and let you get on with your business today.
Yeah, maybe I can sleep off some of this jet lag later. We'll see.
There you go. Okay, we'll talk soon, man. Take care.
All right, take it easy.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.